and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Sarah Dykstra. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear from Megan Fernandez as she reports on how summer storms can affect Lake Michigan's water quality. Stephen Lattimore reports on a popular Ultra Food store in Northwest Indiana that's closing. We'll get the June unemployment numbers from Lauren Chapman. And regionally speaking, host Chris Nolte gives us the details on a vintage World War II aircraft that will be landing in Porter County this summer. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. No one wants to eagerly head to the beach just to find out it's closed. But with summer storms affecting Lake Michigan's water quality, that could be common. Beaches close unexpectedly because of polluted waters. Polluted waters are very serious. They can contain disease-causing pathogens such as E. coli bacteria. Lakeshore Public Radio's Megan Fernandez has more.
Deputy Director of Communications Tara Wolf from the Indiana Department of Environmental Management explains what E. coli is.
E. coli is a naturally occurring bacteria that lives in the digestive tracts of humans and animals. The presence of E. coli in the beach water along Lake Michigan's shoreline is a strong indication that the water may have recently been contaminated by sewage or animal fecal waste that may contain many types of harmful disease-causing organisms.
Swimming in and swallowing beach water contaminated with high levels of E. coli can make you sick, with abdominal cramps, nausea, vomiting, fever, headache, and muscle aches. Tara Wolf tells us how to avoid polluted Indiana beaches.
The best way to plan a trip to the beach is to go online at www.idem.in.gov/beaches and check out the Beach Guard for the latest water quality status of the beaches before leaving home.
Indiana Dunes Ranger Bruce Rowe talks about how the weather can affect E. coli levels.
When you have certain, you know, times in the summer when it's rainier, that's when you'll tend to have higher E. coli counts. So really, if we had a large rain today, I wouldn't recommend coming out to the beach tomorrow unless you call ahead to check with the park.
An easy way to check your local beach E. coli levels is with the Beach Alert app, designed by the Indiana Department of Environmental Management. The app keeps people updated on the water quality of beaches in your area. For more information on how to stay informed on your local beach and learn how to help keep Lake Michigan clean, visit idem.in.gov/beaches. For Lakeshore Public Radio, I'm Megan Fernandez.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. Employees and customers got the bad news that they were hoping would not come. The Ultra Food store in Highland is closing in several weeks. Lakeshore Public Radio's Stephen Lattimore has the story.
If the Ultra Food store in Highland, Indiana is your grocery store, it won't be there for much longer. The financial troubles that have plagued the chain since it went into bankruptcy in December have now forced the store to close, along with its Kankakee location. Ultra Food has been in Highland, Indiana since 1981. Joseph Pete is the business reporter for the Times of Northwest Indiana.
Unfortunately, the Ultra food stores in Highland and Kankakee, Illinois are going to close after the bankrupt Central Grocers, their parent company, wasn't able to line up a buyer at auction. The Strachan Van Til had just done multi-million dollar renovations to these stores back in 2015, added sushi bars, added salad bars, expanded the produce departments, expanded the bakeries, added deli sections where they had like 40 more meats and cheeses. They pumped a ton of money into these stores. But then Central Grocers ran into financial woes. It has been trying to sell itself off entirely since December. It ended up where it was able to sell 20 stores to the Indiana Grocery Group, which is led by Jeff Strack and the Strack and Van Til families, former Strack and Van Til CEO Dave Wilkinson, and some other investors. However, they're only putting in a purchase for 20 of the stores. It did not include the Highland Ultra and the Kankakee Ultra, which are now closing for want of a buyer. Central Grocers just requested in court today that they be able to begin liquidation sales and start liquidating all the inventory.
Pete says once the closing sale begins, it could take a few weeks to sell off the inventory. For employees, it is a sad ending with the loss of good union jobs that helped create a good life for many residents here in Northwest Indiana.
I'm afraid they're probably going to end up being laid off. I don't know. The Indiana Grocer Group has pledged to maintain the jobs it has at the 20 stores that will stay open, but I don't know if they'll be able to place any of the affected employees here. The Ultra has already laid off close. They had 15 stores. They're going to be down to just the one in Maryville on Broadway. There have been more than 2,000 layoffs this year. at various Ultra Food Strachan Van Til locations that Central Grocers has closed after its creditors pressured it into bankruptcy in May.
You know, it is what it is. You know, we've been knowing about this for a while now. It wasn't a matter of if, it was a matter of when.
What are you going to do?
Well, just what anybody do when you're my age, just look for another job and just go through the process of, you know, filing unemployment and going through trying to hopefully find another job soon. I just feel bad for the other folks that have been here for 30 plus years that have to start over now, no matter where they go.
Customers are surprised and saddened at the news. Many have been shopping here for years.
I'm disappointed because they have good bargains, you know, and it's a nice store. They just remodeled it like a year or so ago. And, yeah, I wish they weren't, but that's the way it goes.
What are you going to do now?
Well, I have Van Til's just across the bridge from me, so I usually go there, Aldi's. But if I'm in the neighborhood here, then I come here.
Why do you like this store?
Why do I like it? Well, it has a nice variety of things. It's on my way home from certain places. And the prices are average. Sometimes they're cheaper.
Did you know this store is closing in a couple weeks?
No. Still, this one is too?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
What do you think about that?
Well, it's a shame because I used to go to the one on 165. It's closed. This one's going to close too.
Yeah.
But isn't Strack buying them? And
buying some of them, but not this one.
Not this one. Oh, no. Wow. No, I don't like that it's closing, that's for sure.
In Highland, Indiana, Stephen Lattimore, Lakeshore Public Radio.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. Layoffs began Thursday, July 20th at the Carrier Factory in Indianapolis, where last year President-elect Donald Trump celebrated a deal to save jobs from moving to Mexico. The company agreed to preserve about 700 jobs in exchange for tax breaks, but it's cutting more than 600 others. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Annie Ropeek reports other workers are taking buyouts to retire early.
Robert James is president of the United Steelworkers Local, representing Carrier workers. He was at the factory before some laid off employees' final shifts.
They were in good spirits, basically, because they were wishing the retirees well. But I'm quite sure that there is a lot of concern as to what their future holds.
Exiting workers are getting a week's pay for every year they worked, plus 6 months of health insurance under a deal with the union. Some have also applied for what's called trade adjustment assistance, a federal benefit for people whose jobs are affected by global trade. James says workers could start using that money on training for new jobs as soon as Monday. But he expects a tough transition, especially for workers who spent years at Carrier.
I mean, when you're making $20, $22 an hour or more, to go back out in this market, there are no more $20 an hour jobs starting.
The next round of layoffs is set for December. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Annie Ropeek.
Indiana's unemployment rate is the lowest it's been since November of 2000. But Indiana Public Broadcasting's Lauren Chapman reports Indiana's labor force shrank for the second month in a row.
Indiana's June unemployment rate dropped to 3.0%, bolstered by private sector growth. That growth helped fuel a 0.2% decline in Indiana's unemployment rate, the lowest rate since November 2000. The private sector added more than 10,000 jobs last month, primarily due to growth in business, educational, and health services. But that growth was offset by losses in construction, trade, and utilities jobs. Along that same trend, Indiana's labor force shrank in June for the second month in a row. The labor force includes people who have a job or are actively looking for one. Growth in the labor force is typically viewed as a sign of optimism in the economy. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Lauren Chapman.
Chemical tests at an Indiana tributary that feeds Lake Michigan are coming up clear following a spill of a potentially carcinogenic chemical. The Burns waterway has been tested weekly for hexavalent chromium following April's spill at a U.S. Steel facility, The Times reported. Nearly 300 pounds of the chemical was spilled, which is more than 580 times the daily maximum limit allowed under state law. Coming into direct contact with the chemical can cause skin reactions. The Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore is assisting U.S. Steel with long-term monitoring of four beaches on the waterway. U.S. Steel conducts water testing at Indiana American Water's intake in Ogden Dunes. This is simply about keeping visitors safe, said Charles Morris, an environmental protection specialist at the National Lakeshore. He said that none of the samples taken from the beaches so far have shown a concentration above the 3/100ths of a milligram per liter minimum detection level for hexavalent chromium. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's drinking water standard is 0.1 milligrams per liter. Sampling will continue until the end of August. The April spill prompted the temporary closure of several area beaches and the intake in Ogden Dunes. They were later reopened once EPA tests found no traces of the chemical. Lake Michigan provides drinking water to many residents in Lake, Porter, and LaPorte counties. You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. Indiana's top agriculture official has been tapped to oversee global farm trade for the Trump administration. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Annie Ropeek has more on Indiana Department of Agriculture Director Ted McKinney, who now faces a Senate confirmation to become the USDA's first ever trade undersecretary.
McKinney says he's grateful for the support he's received since being nominated.
I am so honored to be nominated by the president, and I look forward to serving if confirmed.
He's been Indiana's ag chief since 2014. He created the Indiana Grown program and went on a state agricultural trade mission to China. Before that, McKinney worked at two big Hoosier agribusinesses, Dow AgroSciences and Eli Lilly's subsidiary Elanco, where he was director of global corporate affairs. If confirmed to the USDA trade post, McKinney will be tasked with cultivating new markets for American farm commodities and brands. Indiana Farm Bureau President Randy Crone says it's an important job and McKinney can handle it.
It's reaching out, finding new partners, and you know, where can we open up a door for a trade with some other countries or maybe expand the trade that we have.
Indiana is seventh in the nation for exports of ag commodities like corn and soybeans. Hoosier brands like Red Gold tomatoes are also sold overseas. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Annie Ropeek.
John Kane, host of Eye in the Arts, talks with Jeffrey Baumgartner, artistic director, and Amy Black, president of the Dunes Art Foundation's ongoing Dunes Summer Theater performances.
Joining me for this edition of Eye on the Arts are two representatives of Dunes Summer Theater out on the lakefront in, are you in Michigan City?
Michigan City, Michiana Shores.
Michiana Shores. Mm-hmm. I know. I've been there. I really have. I just can't remember.
John, how many years back?
It was a while. I'll admit. No, a few times I've been. But Amy Black is president of the Dunes Summer Theater, and Jeffrey Baumgartner is artistic director. So, Amy, I'm going to start with you and ask about Dunes Summer Theater. Where is it, and how long has it been there?
Well, it's out on Shady Oak Drive and off of 12 in Michigan City, and it's actually been there since 1941.
Yeah.
Under a different name, and then in 1951, it became the Dunes Arts Foundation, a 501c3 mm-hmm. nonprofit organization. And then a year after that, they renamed it the Dunes Summer Theater. Mm-hmm. Very rich legacy. Purdue University used to have 4 accredited classes out there. Mm-hmm. Goodman Theater would send out their directors or their faculty, staff, mm-hmm. and their students. And that was sort of their training ground, if you will, in keeping their mm-hmm. craft honed. So we want to bring it back to those days and make it more of a regional theater, which was the initial intent mm-hmm. of the board back in 1951 when it became the Dunes Summer Theater.
And you pay the actors.
We do. We tell them not to quit their day job. They get $120
and
enough for gas.
Stipend, but it's the first time in the company's history of introducing a stipend for actors. Yeah, sure. They've been paying directors. Again, don't quit your day job. But they've been directors and some designers and everything. Uh-huh. And I think actors continue to be often low man on. So it was time to recognize, and that has allowed us to dive into the Chicago market.
So how have you been evolving up late?
Wow, leaps and bounds. When we got there, Jeffrey and I started there as sort of hands-on in the theater itself about 4 months ago. And honestly, it was just neglected. There was a lot of old props and old clothing and things that just needed
disrepair.
To be taken out. The disrepair, leaks everywhere, no air, no heat. The electrical system was horrific. And so what we've done since then, with the guidance also of our treasurer, Jim Morris, he's been absolutely terrific. He just retired from Exxon and wanted something to dive into, and he certainly dove in. But now we have new air conditioning, which the patrons are very, very pleased with, mm-hmm. because before you'd go and you had to bring your own self-fan. Mm-hmm. New electrical, new lighting system, new websites, online ticketing system, online donation system from our supporters and volunteers, which are critical to our revitalization. Mm-hmm. And we're working closely with Michigan City as well, because they're, as you know, are going through a whole economic revitalization effort, too. Mayor Ron Meir was our steering committee chairman for our opening gala event. We had about 80 people out there, many who have never didn't even know the theater existed. Others hadn't been there in 10 years because it just sort of fell on fallow times, if you will. And we're really awakening it again. And a lot of spit, shine, and polish, and a lot of work has gone into it. And people walk in now, and they're absolutely thrilled and amazed.
And, John, the exciting thing is that it's 66th season of continuous operation.
And the season takes place just in the summer months.
And it's summer, except that we also put in heating for the first time. So there is an opportunity to finally have conversations about
year-round. So what are the summer shows this
summer year? Shows is, you know, when I came on in February, they said, this should be great. You should do like a couple of quality shows. And I said, that sounds good. We should do six. So it has to show that there is tremendous growth. And I think our mandate really becomes lights come up and there's got to be a wow factor. There's got to be a wow factor. So the season is, we just closed last weekend, Red by John Logan, which is, of course, that two-hander based on the master express abstract artist Mark Rothko. He brings in an assistant, Ken, and we kind of see those voices. So that closed last weekend. We are in the throes right now of I Hate Hamlet by Paul Rudnick, which opens next Thursday. It previews Thursday and Friday, opening Saturday. Then we
and
are
a Sunday matinee now.
And a Sunday matinee, 2 o'clock. We inherited a 6 p.m. Curtain time on Sundays, and we found that there's a dynamic to the demographic that is there. If you come out on the weekends and you're Chicago, they leave. They want to get back home.
Right.
So now you could actually conceivably see the 2 o'clock show on your way out of town.
I see.
A lot of times, you know, people have left their weekending. Stephen Sondheim's company is July 20th through July 30th, and it's 2 weekends. The typical schedule is a Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 7 p.m. You could still probably have a cocktail in your hand after the curtain and still watch that lovely sunset that's out there on the South Shore.
That's nice.
And then we do in rotating repertory, it's a Mousetrap, is August 10 through 20. That's Agatha Christie. And then in rotating repertory, 6 performances of Love Letters, A.R. Gurney, who I understand passed away yesterday.
Well, and 5 minutes goes fast, and it's flown by.
And so there we are.
We'll have to have you back another time this summer yet.
How's tomorrow at 10 a.m.?
Well, not then. We'll see. Don't push me.
Thank you for having us on. It means a lot to us.
Let's do that, though. Let's plan to have you
thanks,
back again
John, that's
once,
great.
This, once more this summer.
Terrific.
Okay, well, thanks for coming out, and thank you for listening. And we'll be back with another edition of Eye on the Arts next week.
That's host John Kane with Eye on the Arts, talking with Jeffrey Baumgartner, Artistic Director, and Amy Black, President of the Dunes Art Foundation's ongoing Summer Dunes Theater performances. You can hear this conversation and previous editions of Eye on the Arts online at lakeshorepublicradio.org. Tune in Monday for another Eye on the Arts conversation on Lakeshore Public Radio, and of course, each week on Lakeshore Update. Chris Nolte talks with Hunter Cheney of the Collings Foundation, which is bringing one of its World War II vintage aircraft exhibits back to the Porter County Regional Airport early next month. This year, Hunter says that they have a new and exciting addition to the Flying Fortresses and Liberators that are in their Living History collection that will be coming to Northwest Indiana. Here's that conversation.
We have the National Wings of Freedom Tour aircraft that we'll be visiting. And this is a really unique historical aircraft tour. Think of this tour as a flying memorial, interactive memorial for our World War II veterans. And it features some very rare bomber and fighter aircraft fully restored from World War II. And that is the two heavy bombers, the B-17 Flying Fortress. Of course, most people recognize that plane from the old films like 12 O'Clock High and Memphis Belle. That's one of 8 flying in the United States right now. And another 4-engine heavy bomber, most mass-produced aircraft in American history, and this is the last one of its type flying in the world, the B-24J Liberator, big 4-engine heavy bomber. And then the Doolittle Raid plane you might remember the B-25 Mitchell. This is a very iconic mid-range bomber that was used by Jim Doolittle and the Raiders to attack Japan. That will be out there, and we have two fighters that will be there this year. A TF-51D Mustang. This is a kind of a rare two-seat Mustang, and particular to Valparaiso. And one thing that we're really honored to debut there in Valparaiso is a Spitfire Mark 9. And this is probably one of the most historically significant Spitfire restorations in the world. Flown by two aces, 120 missions throughout the course of World War II, even flew its first escort mission to the 8th Air Force over in Europe, and many other very dangerous missions. And that will be out there for the first time in the United States. After our stay at Oshkosh, we're bringing it straight to Valparaiso, so the folks in Porter County and surrounding areas will have a chance to see a really rare fighter aircraft.
Now, take a minute, if you will, and tell us about all of the work that's been going into not only finding these great airplanes, but restoring them to operating status here, not just to see them on the ground parked, but actually see them in the air.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of the core of the objective of the tour as a whole. Is what we say is that if you read about World War II history, it's something you might remember. But to experience something like historic aircraft from World War II, it's something you never forget. And the aircraft, all of them are just beautifully restored. And so these are a real functioning, the Trulio fully restored aircraft. So when you're inside the planes, what you're seeing, what you're experiencing, aside from, of course, not getting shot at, is straight out of 1944. And so when the planes come in, you figure that for every hour of flying we do in all the aircraft, we put about 10 hours of maintenance into the planes. So you'll see that when we have them out there, we have the crew out there always constantly working on the aircraft, checking everything. They're such historical jewels that people from around the country come together for the sole purpose of keeping this tour flying. And this is how we've been able to do it for the last 28 years. We've surpassed, I think, 3,500 stops since we started.
Wow.
many years ago. And it's a tour that travels around the country. We visit about 110 cities every year, and it's through this real, just a grit and determination and love of what these aircraft represent that keeps them flying. And so when people come out, you pay the $15 to tour through the aircraft, or you pay to go flying in them. It is, in essence, each individual in each city that we visit that helps keep this tour flying, keeps the tour going. And that's the challenge that we're all faced with now, particularly since we're seeing this beloved generation starting to pass, is how do we remember World War II? How do we remember our World War II veterans and what they did, their stories and legacies? And there's no more effective means to do that than having people come and see and feel a tactile interaction with something from this era.
We're talking with Hunter Cheney, who is with the Collings Foundation, which, by the way, is a 501c3 program that has been set up to organize and support living history events like the one that you get to see on August 5th at the Porter County Regional Airport. These are World War II vintage aircraft coming in, being flown in, and in turn landing there on the airport strip. Tell us, Cheney, we mentioned briefly here about the work that's underway, I guess, in finding these planes and restoring them. When you're talking about a plane that is now more than 70 years old, there's probably a lot of difficulty in finding some parts to keep these things up. We're the crews that work on these planes that help them fly and get them on these tours, get all the parts they need to keep them up.
Yeah, so we have machine specialists from around the world and in the United States that help us in manufacturing and restoring essential parts that we use in the aircraft. And that includes everything from the special engine shops that help us fix the, you know, the Pratt and Whitney's, and all the way up to special gauges and components. We have to kind of pull the expertise from around the country to bring the parts in and give them to our mechanics to help keep the planes restored. Keep in mind that the aircraft are, these are American historical jewels. And so a lot of experts from around the country come and volunteer their time in helping keep these planes flying. And it's a dynamic group of people out there traveling with the planes day in and day out. It's we like a flying band of qualified gypsies out there.
I would imagine that probably you have a lot of Air Force veterans and maybe even naval aviation veterans that have been part of the teams that help keep these planes up and take them around.
Yeah, we do. They come from all walks of life, from you know, retired military to you know, professional pilots to just general folks who have a love for the aircraft. This tour really encompasses the full gamut of people with interests and expertise.
And it's so nice to have such a unique visit this time for this particular stop in Valparaiso, the Spitfire fighters. I've seen some of these World War II movies that have some of the replicas, of course, that the movie studios use, but actually get to see some honest footage of World War II, some dogfights, and that show these Spitfires really at work out there against the enemy.
You know, surviving World War II aircraft are unique artifacts from a conflict that truly changed the world. Now, World War II, of course, is the worst conflict in human history, and there were few left even at the end of World War II, and there are perhaps 100 bombers remaining over the 100,000 made by all nations, and approximately 500 single-engine fighters of the 250,000 fighters and attack aircraft produced by all sides still survive in one form or another. And of these fighters, you know, fewer than 5% are actual combat veterans, you know, ones that served, that flew in combat. Most planes that remain were either training aircraft or had seen no use in combat, mm-hmm. if, like a lot of the warbirds and some of the ones that were out on tour. A true Allied combat aircraft in itself is very rare, and this particular Spitfire has an intricately documented history. Again, 120 combat missions, which for those listening, it is a true rarity to survive.
Yeah.
30 at best. And each mission that this particular plane has is clearly detailed. And this particular Spitfire, you know, of course, flew escort on 7 of the first 10 U.S. Air Force missions over France, and it escorted raids that contained the you remember the legendary B-17, the Memphis Belle?
Yeah.
So it flew escort to the original Memphis Belle several times.
Wow.
And it survived, again, real strange twists of, you know, moved to South Africa and was up on a pole for many years and moved from one place to the next and then went into restoration and kind of stopped and kept going. And so the restoration process in its own lasted well over 20 years.
Wow.
And it was brought back up to England and to finish off the restoration. And this will be the first time in public that this Spitfire will be out. And so when people come see it, what you're seeing is this incredible history behind the aircraft. And that's basically what the whole tour is about in general, is it's not about flying old aircraft around. It's the history that they represent. And that's something we just love. They're just beautiful.
Well, that's great. That's a chance to see some great history of World War II, some fighting aircraft that'll be part of the collection that is coming on August 5th, Saturday, from 3 o'clock until 7 o'clock in the afternoon and evening at the Porter County Regional Airport in Valparaiso. And you can find out more, of course, by checking these out. Is there a website people can go to if they want to take a look at these planes, the pictures, and find out more about the tour coming in?
Yeah, absolutely. The great media and additional information can be found at cfdn.org. It's Charlie Foxtrot Delta November.org.
Hunter Cheney is with the Collings Foundation, which is the organization that helps put on these living history tours, helping bring these restored airplanes into Valparaiso this summer for the annual tour. And thank you very much for the information. And we're looking forward to seeing the planes come by here on Saturday, August 5th.
Thank you very much.
And that World War II aircraft exhibit at the Porter County Regional Airport is to benefit the MAC Foundation, which is a Valparaiso-based nonprofit charity that supports training for firefighters, EMTs, and law enforcement. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Chris Nolte.
Regionally speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program's link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Sharon Jackson. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure to search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Sarah Dykstra.